We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall never surrender until, in God's good time, the new world, with all its power and might, steps forth to the rescue and the liberation of people.
In times of universal deceit, truth is the only rebellion left. Give me your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. The wretched refuse of your teeming shore, send the homeless tempest tossed to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door. After just spending 3 days in Philadelphia where I could do nothing, absolutely nothing, without having a foolish, ineffective mask on my face all the time, inside and outside, this poem really hits home. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. Welcome to today's show. Thanks for joining me today. Obviously, on today's show, I want to talk about my recent trip to Philadelphia and my experience at Independence Hall and some of the national monuments there, the Liberty Bell, and the tour that I had, and the tour guides, what they said, the displays, the inscriptions, the material that was given to me in Philadelphia, the birthplace of our nation, the birthplace of the Declaration of Independence, the Constitution, obviously the home of the Liberty Bell, etc., etc. I'm going to talk a little bit about that trip and how it struck me. But I want to first cover the issue of masks. Masks. Obviously, I started out with the poem that is iconic, the poem that is at the foot of the Statue of Liberty. Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free. I put a meme out this week with that poem, and I want to share with you some of the responses I received. Now, most of the responses were appreciative because I think people are sick and tired of this mandate to wear masks. We've seen all the data out there. There are numerous studies that indicate that wearing a mask outdoors in particular, is totally ineffective. Totally ineffective, wearing a mask outdoors. But yet in Philadelphia, it is a municipal edict that you must wear a mask at all times, inside and outside, unless you're in your home. So if you're walking on the sidewalk, you have to wear a mask. If you're jogging in the park, you have to wear a mask. If you're sitting alone or with your spouse in the park, you have to wear a mask. If you're walking your dog, you have to wear a mask. The list goes on and on and on. You enter a restaurant, you know the routine, you've got to wear a mask as you enter. You walk five steps, literally five steps, from the entry point of the restaurant to your table to sit down, and you take off your mask. You sit there with your mask sitting on a table, which is probably contaminated with whatever virus might exist therein, or you sit your mask next to you on the seat, on the chair or on the bench of the restaurant. Then you put your mask back on when you leave. You walk five steps out of the restaurant. Maybe, if you're really disobedient like me, you take your mask off as you walk across the parking lot and get in your car. This stuff is asinine. It's crazy. It makes no sense. We know that at the very beginning of this COVID pandemic that we were told by the Surgeon General that masks weren't necessary and they were relatively ineffective. We were told by Dr. Fauci that masks were unnecessary because they were ineffective. We were told by Dr. Birx. We were told by multiple studies that masks were unnecessary and they really wouldn't work, that the virus was smaller than the porous material of the mask, and therefore, the mask would be ineffective in stopping it. But nonetheless, now we're told to wear masks. And here's the thing. The masks are of various different styles and materials. I wore a bandana. I bought a bandana in a local bookstore, novelty shop by Independence Hall. And I just put it over my face. A bandana. Now, you may say, well, that's your problem. You should have been more respectful. You should have done something else. But the point is, that was totally acceptable. That was totally legal. Every time I went into a restaurant, every time I walked on the sidewalk, every time I entered into one of the tourist sites like Independence Hall, wearing the bandana was totally acceptable. Totally acceptable. I looked at the masks that other people were wearing. Some of them were cloth. Some of them were just the paper masks that you and I are so accustomed to now. I'll guarantee you, almost all of them were dirty. Dirty in the sense that they had been worn for a much longer period of time than they're supposed to be worn. In other words, they were contaminated because you've been wearing it all day long. And now you're breathing in the contamination, your own exhaust, if you will, and all of the moisture that has accumulated inside that mask on a hot day. That's now what you're breathing. And if it's a cloth mask, it's even worse, because you can't tell me that everybody is washing those cloth masks every day or even once, maybe twice a day. Cloth masks over your face all day long. That can't be healthy. It can't be. Well, I posted this on my Facebook, and I want to read to you the response that I received from one woman named Robin. She said this, "Sorry you don't believe in wearing a mask. I don't understand when educated people make that choice. Surgeons wear masks, so why do people suddenly think they don't work? It's not a big deal to wear one, unless your arrogance and self-entitlement attitude tells you otherwise." I want to tell you what my response to Robin was. Surgeons wear masks? Question mark. Well, not when they're jogging, and not when they're sitting in the park, and not when they're getting gas for their car, and not when they're strolling with their spouse, and not when they're walking their dog, and not when they go out to eat, and not when they buy groceries, and not when they do anything other than surgery. And there's a reason for that. And maybe that's because they know that it is completely ineffective to walk around all day long with a mask in all of these other scenarios. The mask is for surgery, for the 1 or 2 or 3 or 4 hours of surgery. Then they take it off because it's contaminated and they throw it away and they go about life as they should. Surgeons don't wear masks all day long. And Fauci said that they are ineffective, and Burke said that they don't work, and the Surgeon General said the same. Numerous studies indicate that you could cause more harm than good if you wear a mask all day long for extended periods of time, as we're being told to do so now. And that's not even addressing the fact that tons of studies are showing that COVID-19 is rarely transmitted via casual, asymptomatic contact. So I'm not sure why educated people or any singular educated person for that matter, would start wearing something this inane just because some mayor or governor who has zero education in medicine or in the sciences says that we have to. Maybe we should stop jumping off the cliff just because they say so, and maybe we should start thinking for ourselves rather than acting like a bunch of stupid sheep. Maybe we should stop following and start leading. This nonsense. It's nonsense. Thank the Lord I live in Bartlesville or Dewey, Oklahoma, where people are not losing their minds. You actually have some people with some common sense rather than living by nonsense. You actually have some people who think for themselves, critical thinkers who can assess a situation and say, something's wrong with this. It makes no sense. Putting a dirty piece of cloth over my face or a dirty piece of paper over my face all day long and inhaling the air that comes through it is not healthy. Maybe we should actually start looking at some of the studies that refute the politically correct agenda of the day. Maybe we should be pro-science rather than anti-science when we discuss some things as simple and inane as wearing a mask and whether or not it makes any sense for us to be told that we have to. Maybe we should ask the logical question, why do I have to wear a paper mask or a bandana over my face to walk 5 steps across a restaurant and then I can take it off for the hour or 2 hours that I sit there in the restaurant having a conversation with the waiter, with the waitress, with the people that I am enjoying the meal with, as well as maybe even the people next to me at the other table or the other booth. It's okay to sit there and not wear the mask in that situation. And I put the stupid mask on a dirty table or a dirty seat or a dirty bench, or I stick it in my pocket. All of those places that I put the mask is going to make it even dirtier than it was in the first place. And then I have to put it back on my face and walk across the restaurant 5 steps so that I can get out of there without somebody harassing me. This, we're really buying this lie. We're really buying this lie. And don't say that I'm a COVID denier. I'm not a COVID denier. The disease is real, just like other diseases and viruses that we have to face every year. But we should look at all of the data, before we start following along behind these governors like Newsom and Cuomo and whatever her name is up in Michigan and all these other idiots that don't have any more education than you and I do in medicine or in science. And frankly, they might have less education than you do in the liberal arts, which teaches you how to think and ask a decent question every once in a while when somebody just says, well, I'm going to jump off the cliff, so we're going to just follow along and do the exact same thing without asking a question. One single question. And this woman named Robin is challenging me, because I apparently am not educated enough. I'm not educated enough to understand why I should wear a mask. If you own a private business and you tell me I have to wear a mask to come in and do business with you, that's your business. I've said it before. I'll say it again. You have the right to tell me what to wear to come in your store or your restaurant. No shoes, no shirt, no service. And if you want to add no mask, fine. You can do that. But I also have the prerogative to say, I don't like wearing that stupid thing, so I'm going to walk across the street and go someplace else to do my business. I don't want to offend you, and I don't want to get into an argument with you as a business owner, but, you know, some businesses ask me to do things I don't want to do. So I'll go buy my product someplace else where they don't do that. They don't say that. They don't require that. But the public situation, where the mayor or the governor or some politician that doesn't know sick 'em from get 'em up when it comes to medicine or contagious diseases or how to go about daily life. These governors, these mayors, their arrogance and self-entitlement, to quote my friend Robin, is the issue here, not yours, not mine. Their presumption is the issue, not yours and not mine. Their ignorance of the Constitution and their breaking of their oath to defend it is the issue. You're not the issue, and I'm not the issue. It's those people that are telling us to do things that they have no right to tell us to do. And it's those people like Robin who are going along willingly without asking a single question. And then they criticize the rest of us who do. That's the issue. Let's take a break. And when I come back, we'll talk about the other issues in Philadelphia and my experience in Independence Hall and at the Liberty Bell in particular. So let's take a few minutes here and acknowledge our sponsors, and I'll be right back in two and a half, 3 minutes to continue the rest of the show. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion. So welcome back to The Rebellion. Okay, I had my little rant on masks, and I shared with you my frustration with one of my Facebook friends over her what I would call mindless, and I don't mean that in a cruel way. It's mindless. It's thoughtless. There's no critical thinking at all in Robin's response. She's basically saying, you were told to do so, so just do it. Well, I'm not going to. I'm not going to. If it's a violation of my personal rights, my constitutional rights, my personal freedoms, I'm not going to do that.
And neither should the rest of you. We all should have the courage to ask a question every now and then and not let people shame us just because they've been watching CNN or Don Lemon or whoever they watch. All right. Independence Hall. One of the things that struck me about Independence Hall was this. Every single speech I heard from one of the tour guides talked about slavery, talked about suffrage, talked about the various different failures of our nation and how people had risen up to push forward in spite of bigotry, in spite of racism, in spite of slavery, in spite of misogyny. In spite of all these things, people had risen up to fight for their rights and fight for more liberty, more freedom, and to be included in the American dream. Now, those are good stories, and I don't want to discount them, but they're all negative stories in a sense, aren't they? They're stories of people who had been disenfranchised. They're stories of people who were disappointed. They're stories of people who were discontent. They're stories of people who had to fight through some negative stuff, the things that I just described. Not once, not one single time in Independence Hall or at the Liberty Bell, not once at Independence Hall or at the Liberty Bell did I ever hear anybody say anything positive about America. Not once. None of the inscriptions, none of the plaques, none of the displays said anything positive about our founding, about what our founding fathers believed, about what they sacrificed and how they fought and what they wrote and what they said and what the principles were that they built our republic on. Not once did anybody take any pride to celebrate Benjamin Franklin or Thomas Jefferson or George Washington or Patrick Henry. Not once did anybody say these were exceptional men with exceptional ideas and they fought for an exceptional thing, the United States of America, a republic that was grounded in the premise that all men and women are created equal and endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, and among those are life and liberty and the pursuit of happiness. Not once did anybody celebrate those things. Independence Hall should be called Discontent Hall, basically, because that's the bottom line of every display and every presentation. Discontent, anger, indignation. We rise up. We fight. We fight. Now, again, the founding of our nation was a revolution, if you will. It was a stand against the King of England because he was oppressing us and not allowing us to be a free people with representation in Parliament. It was all about that. You know it. We were being taxed. And our founding fathers thought it was unfair because the taxes were too high and they felt that we should have representation if there was going to be taxation. No taxation without representation. If that wouldn't have happened, meaning the king and parliament, if Great Britain's government had not oppressed the American colonies by taxing them so severely and by not allowing them to have representation with regard to those decisions, those taxes, and how they were going to be imposed upon the people that lived in the colonies, arguably, we may not have had a revolution. Arguably, we might still be British citizens. But the point is this. Our founding fathers rose up and did something very unique, very different. They set the stage for a new republic that still lasts to this day, and they set it upon ideas that were biblical, that were grounded in the Judeo-Christian ethic. So why in the world weren't we talking about some of those things at the Independence Hall and the Liberty Bell? Why weren't we talking about the fact that the inscription on the Liberty Bell is taken directly from Exodus? Why weren't we talking about the fact that it was the biblical story, it was the story, the narrative of the Exodus that set the stage for our founding fathers and the fight for freedom and liberty? Why weren't we talking about the biblical roots, the roots that Franklin Delano Roosevelt even acknowledged some hundred years later, when he said the directing influence of the Bible exercised upon the founding fathers of this nation is conspicuously evident. We cannot read the history of our nation and the rise and development of this nation without reckoning with the place the Bible has occupied in shaking and advancing this republic. That's FDR, a Democrat. Why don't we talk about the fact that Woodrow Wilson said America was born to exemplify that devotion to the elements of righteousness which are derived from the revelation of Holy Scripture? Why weren't we talking about Andrew Jackson when he said, in the Bible, it is the rock on which the republic rests? Why weren't we talking about Harry Truman, who said, the fundamental basis of this nation's laws was given to Moses on the Mount, and the fundamental basis of the Bill of Rights comes from the teachings which we get from Exodus and St. Matthew and from Isaiah and St. Paul. I don't think we emphasize that enough these days. President Harry Truman, amen. We are not emphasizing them at all. We don't even acknowledge it at Independence Hall. We don't even acknowledge it at the birthplace of our nation. Nothing is said of these things. Why aren't we talking about Abraham Lincoln when he said the Bible is the best gift God has given to men? But for it, we could not know right from wrong. Why weren't we talking about Zachary Taylor when he said a free government cannot exist without religion and morals, and there cannot be morals without religion, nor religion without what? What? The Bible. Why weren't we talking about, why wasn't it discussed that Robert Treat Paine, a signer of the Declaration, said, I believe the Bible to be the written word of God and to contain the whole rule of faith and manners? Or how about James Wilson, a signer of the Declaration and a signer of the Constitution, who said, Our all gracious creator, preserver, and ruler has been pleased to discover and enforce his laws by a revelation given to us immediately and directly from himself. That revelation is contained in the Holy Scriptures. How about Noah Webster? All of the miseries and evils which men suffer from the vice, crime, ambition, injustice, oppression, slavery, and war proceed from them despising or neglecting the precepts contained in the Bible. How about James McHenry, a signer of the Declaration, when he said the Holy Scriptures can alone secure to society an order and peace and justice? Bibles are strongly entrenched. Where they abound, men cannot pursue wicked course and at the same time enjoy a quiet conscience. How about John Adams, a signer of the Declaration? Suppose a nation in some distant region should take the Bible for their only law book, and every member should regulate his conduct by the precepts there exhibited. What a utopia, what a paradise would this region be? The Bible is the best book in the world. I could go on and on and on. How about Benjamin Rush, a signer of the Declaration, who said, by renouncing the Bible, philosophers swing from their moorings and upon all the moral subjects. It is the only correct map of the human heart that ever has been published. Benjamin Rush, a signer of the Declaration of Independence. How about John Jay, the president of the Continental Congress, author of the Federalist Papers? The Bible is the best of all books. Teaches us the way to be happy in this world and in the next, John Jay. And how about John Quincy Adams, one of our first presidents, early presidents? No book in the world deserves to be so unceasingly studied and so profoundly meditated upon as the Bible, the first and almost the only book deserving such universal recommendation as the Bible. Again, I could go on and on and on, but none of these ideas are discussed or on display. All you have is stories of discontent. All you have is stories of anger. All you have is a spotlight on the negative. A spotlight on the negative. That's all you get when you go to Philadelphia. They shine a light on the negative. The negative existed. I'm not disputing that. But all they do is shine a light on the things that were bad and tell a few stories on how people had to rise up to overcome those things. Well, why bother? Why bother? What gave them the right to do that? It was the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution that were both grounded in what? The Bible, the Judeo-Christian ethic, and the exceptional ideas of the Founding Fathers as they crafted documents that gave us the freest society that the world has ever known. But no, the people who are behind the displays, the monuments, where our nation was born, either they don't know any of this, or if they do, they simply don't care. And if this is the kind of stuff that our children are being taught, if this is the kind of stuff that our progeny, our next generation is being taught, God help us. It is your responsibility as a parent and a grandparent to make sure that those kids learn why America is an exceptional place to live. I'm Dr. Everett Piper, and this is The Rebellion.